The Good GP podcast is excited to have MedTech Global as a sponsor. MedTech is on a mission to digitally transform general practice so GPs can focus on quality patient care. For more information about MedTech Global, visit medtechglobal.com.
You're listening to The Good GP, the podcast for busy GPs.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Good GP. I am one of your hosts, Christina DeLange. Before we get into today's episode, I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional owners of the lands upon which this podcast is being recorded. This episode is brought to you from the land of the Yuggera people and the Whadjuk Noongar people. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging. Today's episode of The Good GP is on the increasingly topical area of silicosis. And to help unpack this evolving space, I am joined by Adjunct Professor Lynn Fritchie. Professor Fritchie is an epidemiologist with a particular interest in occupational causes of cancer. Thanks for joining me, Lynn. It's great to have you on the podcast today.
Thank you, Christina.
So let's jump into it with a bit of background information. Can you tell me, Lynn, what is silica dust and why is it harmful?
Okay, so the most common type of silica dust is crystalline silica, and it's found naturally in sand and stone, and it's also part of concrete and mortar. But crystalline silica is also used to make a variety of products such as engineered stone, which is the product used to make kitchen and bathroom benchtops, and it's also in bricks and tiles and paving. So when it's in a product, silica is perfectly safe. The problem arises when the product or stone is worked, so when it's cut or drilled or polished or ground, that creates a very fine dust, and these dust particles are small enough to get right down into the alveoli and stay there. So when these particles build up in the lungs, they can cause serious illnesses, the most common of which is silicosis, but also lung cancer. And there's also increasing evidence that silica dust can cause autoimmune diseases, including SLE, systemic sclerosis, and rheumatoid arthritis. So an added complication to all this is when the silica dust is combined with other dusts, such as coal miners who get black lung. And the dust from engineered stone is also a problem because dust from engineered stone also contains resins, colorants, and other materials which seem to increase its toxicity. So because the dust from engineered stone includes those constituents, plus it's very, very fine, it seems to be the most dangerous form of silica that we know. And we've had a real epidemic of silicosis arising from engineered stone, which comes on early. Some of the patients are even in their 20s. It progresses much more quickly than traditional silicosis, and it may continue to progress even when they're removed from the exposure.
Right. So it is really significant then. Who is at risk of complications, would you say?
Basically, anyone who's working in an area where silica dust is generated. So it's most common in construction or demolition, but also in mining and in earth moving. A bigger risk is when the area that the silica dust is being generated is poorly ventilated. So like in building tunnels, so people who are doing the tunnels for the roads under our big cities and in underground mines. But also, to a lesser extent, places which make pottery, ceramics, foundries, and sandblasting. So a whole range of different areas wherever these products with silica in them are worked.
Yeah, okay, so there are actually a number of different workers that could be impacted. And I guess this does highlight the importance of occupational screening for us as GPs. What would you say, Lynn, like when as a GP should we be asking patients about their occupation then? And I guess are there any specific points in the history that you feel are most pertinent to ask?
So silicosis is a terrible disease and there's no cure. So the best thing to do is to try and prevent it in the first place. So the most important thing to do is to understand the circumstances of exposure. So what does a person do on a day-to-day basis? How dusty is the workplace? What sort of things are done to reduce dust? Do they use water? Do they use extraction fans on the actual machines? Do they wear respiratory protection? And if so, is that just a mask or is it a proper respirator? If it's a proper respirator, is it correctly fitted? Do they change the filters? Do they have a beard? So there's a whole range of things that result in a risk in that the control of the dust in the workplace, but also the protection of the worker personally. And if it sounds like the place is extremely dusty, you can report it to your state WorkSafe to keep other workers safe. So one of the issues is trying to understand what the circumstances are and whether they're at high risk. But if someone is exposed, the most important thing to do is to reduce the dust levels in the air to below the workplace standard. And that standard has just recently been reduced and it is quite low. And in Australia, it's a legal requirement for all employers to keep the level of dust below that standard. So large companies and small companies, they're all responsible for the safety of anyone on their site. And so it's really important to try and keep those levels low. So to try and work with the employer if you can, or work with WorkSafe to make sure that the workplace is a safe place. From the point of view of health monitoring, it's also in the legislation. So there are formal requirements for the types of testing which need to be done, and there'll be forms which need to be filled in and submitted to the WorkSafe in your state. The minimum is just to have a basic demographic and medical and occupational history, but also records of how they were exposed, the questions that I was talking about before, what were they doing, how well was the dust controlled, what kind of respiratory symptoms they might have now, also to do spirometry. And at baseline and for high-risk workers, such as miners and people who work with engineered stone and other stonemasons, a chest x-ray with a full PA view is required. However, it's known that chest x-rays are only useful at later stages of the disease, and there's increasing use of low-dose CTs for really high-risk workers. They're much more sensitive than chest x-rays. In Western Australia, it's required for high-risk workers to have a low-dose CT, but it's not yet required in other states. The other thing is, if you're going to do monitoring, there are lots of regulations about the monitoring, and I strongly recommend that anyone who's doing occupational health monitoring do the training that's provided by their state's WorkSafe to make sure that you're doing it right and that you are protecting your patients.
Okay, thanks, Lynn. So I guess that kind of covers off the asymptomatic population group that may have had a previous exposure. But when should we be suspicious of complications from silica dust in terms of a patient presenting symptomatically, and what testing should we be considering in that space?
So, I mean, again, you would need to do an occupational history and find out where they're getting this dust and what sort of symptoms they're getting. So if you know that they are working in a dusty environment, then symptoms that the environment is already affecting their lungs could be chronic cough, especially if it's productive, shortness of breath, fatigue and weakness, and unintended weight loss. So unfortunately, if they're starting to get these symptoms, the disease is likely to be already starting. It may not show on a chest x-ray, so a low-dose CT may be recommended. You should consider referring them to an occupational physician or a respiratory physician, and in their letter, emphasise their silica exposure. I think it's important to note that there's evidence that the silicosis caused by engineered stone is much, much worse than any other type of silicosis. So if a patient has worked with engineered stone, you need to take this really seriously. We've had hundreds of cases of silicosis in the last few years occurring around Australia. And the silicosis seems to be much, much more severe and progressing really rapidly. And even removing them from work where they're exposed, the disease can continue to progress. So it's important that the GP understands where the silica is coming from, and if it's engineered stone, it's take it very seriously and urgently refer them to the occupational physician or respiratory physician.
Okay, great points there. And are there any other counselling tips or preventative health points we should be discussing with impacted patients?
One thing that people are quite concerned about is their work and what will happen if they don't work. And there is compensation available, and many states have put in a fast tracking system for silicosis cases because it's very clear that this particular disease is caused by their work. There's 11 different compensation schemes in Australia, and it's really hard for many patients to navigate this system. So a really useful thing to GPs to do is to help them navigate through the system and get their compensation. So one less thing to worry about is how they're going to pay the next rent or the mortgage. You can look up the list of the different compensation schemes on the Safe Work Australia website, or phone your local WorkSafe. So that's compensation, and that's one area. If they have a silica-related disease, they need to be removed from the dangerous area, and you should probably report that workplace to your local WorkSafe. If one person has got silicosis, many of the other workers there will also be getting ill. One of the other issues that really has come to the fore recently is the mental health implications of having a diagnosis of silicosis. These are often young men who've been working for all their lives and have young families, and they can be quite distressed and upset about this. It's like they're going to suddenly, they've got a chronic disease and they're going to die shortly. And so counselling and mental health help is really important. If they're asymptomatic, I guess information about the symptoms to look for, it's an opportunity for smoking cessation as well. So just general health tips is also probably useful because this is a chronic disease and anything you can do to help them get more resilience is useful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that long-term support, I guess you're highlighting is really important because it can be have such an impact across, you know, multiple facets of their life. Obviously, work is an important thing that we spend a lot of our time doing. So once our work is impacted and we're potentially removed from work, that has multiple implications across other facets. And like you mentioned, the mental health implications can be quite significant. All right, Lynn, well, that has all been really helpful. Are there any resources that you can point GPs towards that may be helpful on this topic, especially as it kind of increases in its visibility amongst the general public, the potential then for people to present to us as GPs with questions around it? Where are places that we could go to get a bit more information?
So WorkSafe departments have an extraordinary amount of information on their website. Sometimes it's hard to navigate and find where the information is, but they do have a lot of information about what to look for, how to report it, and what the options are for people who have silicosis. They also have very good training. A lot of WorkSafe departments, well, in fact, all of them run training sessions for GPs and for physicians who are seeing people with occupational diseases, and these are really worth attending as well. So it's a state responsibility. So each of the states have their own area. And also there's complications in that some of the people who are employed federally are under different schemes. However, start with your local WorkSafe. They're a good place to start. Some of the non-governmental organisations also have good information, such as the Cancer Council and the Lung Foundation. So those are also areas where you can find more clinical information about dealing with silicosis.
Lynn, thank you so much for your time today. It's an important and evolving topic, and I really appreciate you joining me today and sharing your expertise. Thank you.
Thank you, Christina.
Thanks for listening to the Good GP Podcast, a proud member of the Talking Health Tech Podcast Network. Make sure you're subscribed on your favourite podcast player so you don't miss an episode. If you have any questions or would like to contact the Good GP, send an email to thegoodgp@gmail.com. The content of this podcast represents the opinions of the Good GP, hosts and guests of the show. The content is aimed at general practitioners working in the Australian context and is not intended to represent medical advice. Any listeners experiencing symptoms or who have concerns about their health should seek advice from a registered health professional. We make every effort to ensure that the information shared is accurate and up to date at the time of recording, but welcome any feedback or corrections. The content of this podcast is general in nature and does not refer to specific patient management. We recommend all health professionals review local and up-to-date guidelines prior to any clinical decisions.